Chapter 40. A Man for All Seasons. My first Christmas in San Miguel de Allende was fast approaching. And with it came the long-anticipated steady rain, in combination with colder temperatures. So different to the climatic conditions I'd experienced over Christmas in Australia or New Guinea or Africa. I was cozy and warm in Esther Kellerman's beautiful apartment, with its open fireplace and large stash of dry firewood. My full quarter at the Instituto Allende was taken up with intensive Spanish, and I needed it, as my relationship with photographer Carlos Contreras deepened. We were together most weekends. Either Carlos would drive to San Miguel or I'd take the bus to Mexico City, arriving at the bus station on the north side of the city, where he'd pick me up to visit family, or attend a function, or both, as the city was pulsating with interesting things to do. And Carlos certainly had his finger on the pulse. He was the eldest of six children. His father was an architect who held the chair of architecture at the University of Mexico. His mother was a Spanish import who vowed and declared she'd not return to Spain while General Franco was still alive. And she kept her word. Carlos was an energetic extrovert, and I was willingly swept along by his enthusiasm and interest in all aspects of Mexican life, both contemporary and historical. He was a great event organizer, with an extraordinary inner knowing that, if need be, he could talk his way out of trouble. In early 1975, accommodation once more became an issue for me. Esther was due back from the United States, and I couldn't envisage returning to live in my mother's house with Carlos in tow. Recent experience had shown that my mother and my Mexican boyfriends were an unsettling mix. I found a small, reasonably priced apartment, within walking distance of the Instituto, the town center, and the fresh food market. The ground floor comprised a living room, a dining room, a small kitchen with a walled patio at the rear. Upstairs there was a bathroom and two bedrooms, a perfect weekend love nest. For some time, Carlos had been waxing gastronomical about making a special potato omelette, known as a tortilla de papas in Spanish. It was a delicious savory favorite throughout Latin America. As I'd not tasted one, he decided to remedy the situation on one of his weekend visits. At this point in the story, it is important to explain that Carlos came from a well-to-do family where he was only expected to eat, not cook, so I was looking forward to watching him in action. My kitchen was tiny, with little preparation space. As Carlos settled into creating his masterpiece, every surface including the floor was gradually strewn with strips of grated potato. As I watched, it became glaringly obvious that he was accustomed to being shadowed by unobtrusive kitchen staff who cleaned up after him. Notwithstanding, the end result was magnificent, but it was the last time he cooked in my kitchen, as eating out was far less stressful. Carlos lived with his parents and siblings. He was the product of an influential family, who lived in a two-story brick house that wrapped around a central courtyard, and was designed by his father. The house was located in the elite suburb of San Uncal. The ground floor provided family living spaces, dining room, kitchen, laundry, downstairs loo and maid's quarters, whilst the top floor provided bathrooms and separate bedrooms. 7 or 8 in total. Visiting the Contreras family was always a drift into the unpredictable. Particularly amusing were Carlos's father's occasional unsolicited laconic comments. On one occasion, I arrived dressed in a fine woolen tweed mini dress, stockings and high heels, as Carlos and I were going on to a gathering requiring smart casual dress. A change, as I mostly wore a shirt, a jacket, straight-legged jeans and flat shoes when I visited. After greeting me warmly, Carlos Sr. quipped, "Morley, it's so nice to see you have legs instead of tubes." I had no reply. At mealtimes, the family gathered around their circular dining table that seated 12, where they ate from solid silver plates, using solid silver cutlery. The witty conversation flowed in 4 languages, because the Contreras' offspring were all bilingual as they attended either the French school, the English school or the German school. As a result, Carlos spoke French with a Parisian accent, and his sister spoke English with a pommy plum. When I first heard her speak English, I was stunned. I couldn't believe my ears, as it was very unusual to hear a Mexican speak English without an accent. My most memorable gaffe at the Contreras dining table was a classic. I'd everyone's undivided attention as I told a longish story in Spanish. In the telling, I confused two Spanish words. The word for butterfly, mariposa, and the word for faggot, maricón. A split second later, the table erupted with everyone falling about laughing. What did I say? I was mystified until someone explained my mistake, and I felt like a complete idiot. Carlos and I discovered we shared a fascination for social anthropology. My interest stemming from living alongside indigenous tribes in both Papua New Guinea, and to a lesser extent East Africa. His interest had been piqued having twice spent Holy Week, Semana Santa, with the Kora Indians in Jesus Maria, a small town in the rugged mountains of Nayarit, located on the Pacific coast. He visited once in 1968 and again in 1972. As a light-skinned Mexican with a gift of the gab, he talked his way into photographing the Kora's secretive quasi-religious Easter ceremonies that fused pagan and Catholic practices, the combination being a collection of unique rituals. Central to the Holy Week rituals were the men's costumes. A combination of painted bodies and strange hats with feathers, with some wearing animal masks made of paper mache. Their striped bodies reminded me of the ceremonial body painting of Australia's First Nations people. Carlos returned home with extraordinary photographs and a collection of artifacts, including a traditional Huichol man's costume handmade from manta, a calico fabric, with colorful scatterings of decorative cross-stitching on both the shirt and the pants. After seeing Carlos's Kora photographs for the first time, I was astounded. When I suggested he exhibit them along with the artifacts, I already had a venue in mind. The Instituto had a number of gallery spaces, and I knew that the content would provide a rare window into the life and rituals of the Kora, for both students and the wider San Miguel community. With my previous experience mounting exhibitions with national parks and wildlife, and the Australian Museum, I'd be in my element, and able to make the most of the material. Carlos agreed, and some months later the Kora exhibition was mounted, with the help of his younger brother Pedro, who joined us from Mexico City to hang the work. The weekend before, in the dead of night, we had plastered the town with exhibition posters inviting people to roll up to the official opening the following Saturday. Saturday afternoon arrived, and we were ready. The work looked wonderful, and we even managed to catch our breath before the crowd began to gather to view the photographs, have a drink, listen to the speeches, and toast the photographer. As this was Carlos's first exhibition, his extended family drove up from Mexico City for the opening and stayed on, deciding to make a weekend of it. The next day, Sunday, my mother and I were invited to join the family for lunch at the fancy resort where they'd overnighted, not far out of San Miguel. We picked up my mother and drove out to join the clan. This was obviously their way of thanking us for arranging a venue for Carlos's exhibition, and at the same time giving his family the opportunity to meet my mother. I always enjoyed the Contreras clan, but in the lead-up to the gathering I was experiencing intermittent waves of apprehension, as I imagined what could go wrong at the meeting of the families. As it turned out, my concerns were well-founded. What transpired from the get-go was jaw-droppingly unexpected. We arrived and after introductions, a splendid lunch was served, but the gathering was completely derailed by my mother's strange behavior. She did not speak one single word. I was mortified and so relieved when it was all over, left wondering what the Contreras collective thought of us. Afterwards, I was thankful that our relationship managed to weather the storm, as Carlos, his family and his fascinating circle of friends continued to provide me with extraordinary experiences and surprising insights into Mexican life. And our next planned adventure was huge. On reflection, Word confusion. Mari Poza or Mari Con. This wasn't the first or the last time I got into a tangle speaking Spanish. My Mexican friends were incredibly tolerant as I crashed through their language, in my efforts to be understood. Pedro Contreras. Carlos's youngest brother went on to work in museums. Years later, he told me that his career choice was the direct result of working together on Carlos's photographic exhibition at the Instituto Gallery. My mother. The no-speaks incident at lunch was yet another example of the awkward position my mother's behavior often placed me in. I suspect it may very well have been the first nail in the coffin of my relationship with Carlos and his wonderful family. Irrespective of the inevitable demise of our relationship, whenever I later visited Mexico City, the Contreras family would assemble to welcome me warmly and catch up. I visited Mexico for the last time on my way back from Argentina and Chile in 1990. As Carlos's father was now widowed, the family gathered at his apartment for our customary catch-up. Carlos Sr. died in 1993. Facts. General Francisco Franco was the military dictator of Spain from 1939 until his death in 1975. The 36-year period from Franco's nationalist victory to his death is commonly known in Spanish history as Francoist Spain or the Francoist dictatorship. Cora Photographs. The Cora of Nayarit was Carlos's first series of ethnographic photographs. El Circo Bibis was the second, and the series that secured his national reputation as an ethnographic photographer. The Cora and the Huichol Indians are two Mexican Indian tribes who live deep in the remote mountains of western Mexico. The Cora inhabits the western Sierra Madre, in the states of Durango and Nayarit. The Huichol lands adjoin in the state of Nayarit and occupy parts of Jalisco. Even though their tribal areas adjoin, there are distinct differences both culturally and linguistically, but their traditional costume design is similar.